everybody. This is John Yeager. Welcome to another episode of Cast Matters. Today, we're excited to have Derek Bradford. He's a colleague of mine and Whitley Penn, and he's a part of our Transaction Quarterback Services Group. Derek, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, John. So like you were saying, I run our Transaction Quarterback Group, or as we like to call it, TQB, which is a wing under our deal advisory group at Whitley Penn. So I've been with the firm roughly 5 years now. Prior to that, I was with one of the big four firms concentrating on federal taxes. And then I made the switch over to join Whitley Penn under the consulting umbrella. Since then, had a chance to work on a lot of exciting things. And our most recent adventure is this transaction quarterback, which we'll be discussing today.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that, because I think our theme today is positioning for exit success. And to give our listeners a little background, this is a series of podcasts we've had around client accounting and advisory services and how it's evolving and how it has evolved to help our clients take advantage of opportunities in the marketplace. We started with them talking about what it means, what CAS means, what's incorporated in that, what the technology typically looks like, advisory, what implementations, those type of things can look like. And then we've evolved into, now that we've kind of got our infrastructure in place, you know, what does that mean for the client to now take advantage of some advisory type services that really are where the value is? You know, things like the controller advisory, CFO advisory, and certainly TQB. So again, glad to have you. To start off, you know, in CAS, we talk about accounting, we talk about systems, processes, reporting. Why go through all that brain damage? You know, obviously there's some obvious answers, but from your perspective, why go through all that brain damage to make all that work?
Yeah, absolutely. As we like to say, the numbers of the business really tell the story of the business. The business is what the numbers say they are. So the better systems you have, the better processes you have, the more processes you have around reporting and month-end close and year-end close, those numbers are going to be cleaner and more efficient, and that's going to help your business run more efficiently. And in the turn, when your business reaches the end of the life cycle, it's going to make the transaction so much smoother and so much easier if you have dependable, clean numbers that are easily accessible.
Absolutely. So I know when we talk to clients and prospects, we talk that every business has an entrance and every business has an exit. You don't always start at the same place. You don't always exit the same way, right? So an exit can be a retirement, exit can be a sale, exit can be an IPO, exit can be a lot of different things. You know, I think having all those processes and technology and reporting is good for all those, but specifically, you know, around the exit strategy, because I know you guys have run into situations where, you know, clients have wanted to go through an exit, they've been approached and think they're getting potentially a good valuation, but one, they don't have the numbers potentially to back that up, and two, it's going to take them a long time to do that, so they're not really prepared for an exit.
Yes, we see that all the time where, you know, these companies, it could be third, fourth generation companies that they're looking for the succession plan and they realize that it may not be in the business. So the obvious next place to turn is let's look at transacting and selling the business, whether that be a partial sale to private equity where they stay involved with some rollover, or maybe a strategic buyer where they just put their hands up, they say, hey, I'm ready to get out. But in that process, the potential buyer's going to look at everything about that business. They're going to know it better than you by the end of it. And if you don't have the numbers available, time kills all deals. So those numbers need to be clean. They need to be readily available and they need to be correct on the first time, or these buyers move on and they'll find the next person. There's so many transactions going on right now in the world with private equity taking off like it has over the last 10 years. There's so much money or dry powder in the market that's needing to get placed. And if you can't provide what they need, almost borderline immediately, they move to the next target.
Is there also opportunities where, you know, because you can't justify a certain valuation, they may still be interested in buying your company, but you're not going to get the full value of what you should get if you had numbers to back you up to get true valuation.
Oh, absolutely. That comes into play a lot of times with companies that say they have a strategic plan that would earn the high end of a multiple for evaluation, but during the due diligence process, they can't provide the support for that. And so obviously that starts to move down into the median or even lower end of the multiples.
So hope is not a strategy. Is that what you're telling me?
Hope can be a strategy. I think it works for some people.
But not typically in finalizing a PE deal, I'm guessing.
Not typically in that situation, but miracles happen every day.
That they do. So when you encounter a client like this, or hopefully you're encountering a client prospect way before that conversation takes place with the market, when do you start planning this exit, and what's the point of kind of looking ahead? We talked a little bit about it, but let's go a little bit into when you should start planning and what's the point of that planning ahead.
I'm a firm believer that you should always be operating your business like you're about to exit, because when you're doing that, your books are the most clean, you're running it as efficiently as possible. And even if you're not going to transact, you might as well get the maximum value out of your business while you're holding it. So firm believer should always act like you are. But really, we like to be involved. We call it 6 months to 3 years ahead of a potential transaction. That gives us time to ask all the appropriate questions, get to know the business, get to know the business owners, and really implement any strategic initiatives that we see during that time period, that whether that be EBITDA improvements, implement a new accounting system, start to get audits for a company that maybe has not been audited in the past. Those 6 months to 3 years just give you a little bit of buffer to get ready.
So you talk about 6 months to 3 years, that kind of raises the question for me, which is what makes it 6 months? What makes it 3 years? What are the factors that go into deciding, you know, kind of how much time you might need?
That's a great question. 6 months, any sooner than that, it really just doesn't give us time to get involved and really get to know the business. That's kind of the minimum time to get some of these strategies implemented, to maybe start seeing EBITDA tick up or really start to grow the business through sales. And then if you're looking at any longer than 3 years, it's just so unpredictable, especially with the way the economy is today. It's just hard to say anything past that. So we feel like that's a good time frame, that it's long enough on the front end to let us get started and feel like we can make a difference, but also not too long to where it's drug out and you just so many unpredictable things past that 3 year time frame, we feel like.
Gotcha. So shorter than 6 months, you're probably should be more ready, and you can engage in the investment banking firm or whatever to construct the deal, and you'll find out, you know, that whether you're ready for it or not. And then, as you said, you know, I in most of the strategic planning conversations I have these days, which are different than what I had 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you wanted a 5 year plan. Now it's like, you know, at max, like you said, 3 year, maybe 2 year plan, because who knows what's happening after that. Our infrastructure is so varied. It's a global market. The government is in disagreement. There's all kinds of things that impact that time frame that it's almost impossible to kind of go further than that.
Absolutely. And especially with the interest rate environment, how it is today, even with as much money as in private equity, they still like to leverage some portion of these deals, which is a huge value detractor with the interest rate environment today and getting banks to want to close deals. So that's another part of that 6 months is, you know, the sales process, where it used to be quick, it's no longer a quick thing, and it can really take away from the operations of the business as well if companies are having to worry about the transaction rather than running the business.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier that there are things you can do, you know, with 6 months lead time, obviously more things you can do with a 3 year lead time. Can you give some kind of examples of how you've worked with clients to improve their processes, to improve their valuation, that maybe led them to get a higher multiple, whatnot? Do you have any specific examples that the audience might be able to latch on to?
Yeah, this is a great question, John, about what really makes that 6 month process necessary and how we can really drive value during that time. So we actually got referred in through an investment bank for one of our current clients that they'd gone to the investment bank and said, hey, we're looking to sell. And the investment bank started asking for reports, asking for all this documentation that company management could not provide timely. And what was provided was incorrect a lot of the times. And it just really showed that they didn't have the tools necessary to get through a transaction. The company was really five different divisions. They were running it as one consolidated group and didn't understand the different components for each of those divisions. So we were able to come in, help them implement budgets for each of those and really start to understand the costs, understand the revenue flow, the customer concentration, helped to work through a lot of potential problems that at the end of the day, they actually just went back, started interviewing investment banks again, and it's going to be a smooth transaction process that we think will close within the next 6 months or so.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like you take kind of an income statement approach and then maybe a balance sheet approach and figure out, okay, are there ways that I can improve the top line? Are there ways that I can improve the bottom line? And are there ways that I can bring value on the balance sheet? Can I increase the value of the assets? I know that's a high level, but it sounds like at the highest level, that's kind of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So most transactions run off of an EBITDA multiple. So the income statement is the easiest piece to drive value mm-hmm. for transactions. But also on the other end, if you have time, there's lots of things that you can do on the balance sheet side, primarily around working capital, that you're looking at how much money do we need to leave in the business after a potential transaction that maybe the company has excess working capital. They always have prior to the transaction, we can pull some of that out and show that, hey, it is possible to run this company with less cash, let's manage our AR, let's get our cash conversion cycle quicker. And that really drives value for potential buyers.
Yeah, I've been part of those discussions where there's a lot of cash operating cash in the business, but based on the operating budget and cash flow management, all that one needed. So prior to the transaction finalizing, you're able to pull some of the cash out to the owners and move forward with that. And I think that, you know, seemed to be good for all parties. So taking all that, and I assume there's kind of a typical process that you'll go through with clients to work with them through that cycle, whatever that is. What are the kind of key three or four, you know, steps in a typical process like that?
So, of course, there's kind of the traditional process. But with that being said, every transaction is different. Every company is different. And each one's going to have unique pieces that are a part of it. But typically, you know, we start by document gathering. One of the key pieces of a transaction is going to be the data room. It's what everyone's going to look at, which is where obviously the CAS group comes in with accounting systems and processes. The cleaner that information is, the more valuable the company, the quicker it can be provided, and the more that management can obviously concentrate on running the business. So one of the key roles that we play is we manage a lot of that data gathering, and we'll actually manage the data room, which gives management the ability to concentrate on running the business day to day instead of running the 5,000 different reports that are going to be needed for potential buyers to look at. The next step is to engage an investment bank. So we help with that. We maintain investment banking relationships, and we like to obviously interview 3 to 5, let company management decide who they like the best, who they want to work with, because those guys are really going to be daily in your face during the transaction process. So it not only needs to be someone who can bring you the most value, but someone that you like and would enjoy working with. So we feel like it's important to interview a couple of different banks and really make sure that you're making the correct decision there. And after you hire an investment bank, the next big step is a quality of earnings, which looks at trying to find a normalized adjusted EBITDA. So if the business has one-time expenses in it, we can pull those out, increase the EBITDA, and really drive value. So we have a great group here at Whitley Penn that handles that process, make introductions to them. They do a fantastic job. And then from there, it's working with the investment bank to find the correct buyer. And that process, once you hire the investment banks, typically around 9 months. It used to be closer to 6, but deals are just taking a little bit longer to get done.
Gotcha. Well, that That was a great overview. I appreciate that. I know when you guys started this this practice area, I felt that there was a lot of connection between what we do and work with clients and the client accounting side with their technology deployment, those kind of things that that could tie into what you guys are doing. So we're excited to see the offering and work closely with you. If there's someone out there listening that would like to introduce themselves to you and maybe learn more about your service, how would they reach you?
Yeah, so we're always available through the Whitley Penn website. We have a page there for transaction quarterback. Email addresses are there available. Call or LinkedIn. We're pretty active on LinkedIn and can be reached there anytime as well.
Awesome. Well, Derek, anything else? I know we've spent a lot of time on this. I think you've provided a ton of information. Anything else that you want to leave us with?
I don't think so. I think that hopefully we've given the listeners some information. And if anybody's interested in selling your business or you're even thinking about it, please reach out anytime. We'd be happy to help.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, thank you, Derek, for being on the show. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your interest. And please stay tuned for another episode of Cast Matters in the coming weeks. Take care, everybody.